The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
a beast.
We're told in the Book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan. Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
More here.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
Wrapping up another week, I am Derek Gilbert.
And I am Sharon. Let me come in again. Blah. Who am I? I'm Sharon Gilbert. Welcome to our humble bunker, everybody. Oh, my goodness, what's going on in Egypt?
Yes, January 28th, 2011, which incidentally, 128 adds up to 11, so sort of an 11-11 today.
Oh, I hadn't even thought about that, but that is very true. And
yes,
over there, many things going on. Today was the Day of Wrath, and many people, that's what they were calling it, and many people took to the streets, not only in Cairo, but also in Alexandria.
Mm-hmm.
And I had missed a few days ago, apparently in Algiers, there was an attempt at rioting, and it was very quickly put down.
Yeah. Well, you did mention it on yesterday's
show. I said that Algeria might join in.
Okay.
But apparently they actually did give it a try. I suspect that if Egypt manages to topple Mubarak, which they're about halfway done today, I think that Algeria and Libya may just join in.
This is really a and it's surprising that it took Fox News today, as you were watching things throughout the day, so long to catch on to the story, where CNN was had jumped on this pretty early.
You know, CNN was following it yesterday, and so this morning the first thing I did was clue into CNN, and then I went over to Fox, and they were reporting on local politics,
mm-hmm.
politics, schmolitics, all. You know, so I went back to CNN, and I occasionally went over to Fox, and it took them a while.
Yeah. Well, what happened today was Hosni Mubarak said he would request the resignation of his cabinet and that he would appoint a new cabinet Saturday, the 29th.
Reshuffling chairs.
Yes, on the Titanic. But he is, of course, going to remain in power, he thinks.
He thinks.
Now, what?
They were standing outside his window chanting that they hate him
mm-hmm.
and that they hate his son.
Which could be why his son
fled the country.
Mubarak has, as we mentioned yesterday, been in power for about 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time in his tenure as president of Egypt that protests like this have lasted so long and been so violent. 26 people have died. Interestingly, according to AP, 26 people have died. That's 13 times two. And at least 13 were wounded today. And I'm going to have to
That's 13 times three.
Yeah.
That's a triplet.
Yeah. And I'm going to have to read the AP story that I found earlier. I was reading it on my iPod. But, yeah, there were a couple of 13s in the story, of course. But the point is that Mubarak is hanging on by a thread. And by making concessions, some observers and analysts think that he's just emboldened the protesters. And you know, culturally in that part of the world, if you show weakness, your enemy, your opponent, generally doesn't have pity on you and let up. They generally, you know, go in for the kill.
Well, I watched not only on CNN, I was also watching online the Al Jazeera stream, and you could see when the military rolled in, because the police weren't able to contain them, so the military rolled in about mm-hmm. halfway through our day. Of course, it's, you know, 7 hours later over there. You could see the people in the streets, you know, running up, and instead of running away, they were running up and greeting the soldiers.
That is correct.
It was a very friendly exchange.
Right.
And I suspect that Hosni Mubarak saw that. I think he sent them in thinking he would frighten the rioters
mm-hmm.
and that the soldiers would, if needed, fire upon them, and they did not.
Yeah.
So he figures, at the very least, he's got to get rid of his cabinet.
Mm-hmm. Because the military at this point has not openly sided with the protesters as far as anyone can tell, but the fact that they did not fire on the protesters when they were called in to back up the security forces, which are apparently overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that the Muslim Brotherhood is now part of it.
Right.
But you know what also? I kept reading on Twitter that, first of all, the internet was down. It was cut. The internet was cut. Phone lines were cut as far as cell phone lines were cut. You could not get out except with a hard line phone, mm-hmm. a landline. And that people figured out very quickly, thanks to people who were tweeting online, okay, if you dial in the old dial-up, you can dial into this number and here's the password and you can get online. It won't cost you anything. There were people in other countries who were trying to help. Yemen was one of the countries trying to help. There also was were people who would call in to friends in other countries and say, here is my Twitter account username and password. Mm-hmm. Could you just let me dictate? And so you got lots of tweets coming out of Egypt.
Right. The fact that Egypt chose to shut down the internet, and this is a bit of an aside, a left turn for just a moment, because the internet, as we've been talking about this week, has been very useful to the protesters in organizing their flash mobs, begs the question here in the United States why the Obama administration believes it needs to give the president the power to basically give the president a kill switch for the internet here in the United States.
But listen to this. This afternoon's press conference,
Robert Gibbs?
I was surprised to see he was still up there. Because he is leaving, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
You must have figured this was too big a thing to hand off to the new guy. But Gibbs was up there talking, and he made it very clear that in this country of freedoms and mm-hmm. rights, that freedom of the internet, freedom to, a right to the internet was understood by Washington. He kept repeating that over and over again. We would never switch this off if you guys came and, started beating on 1600 Pennsylvania.
Sure. If you guys were using freedom of the internet, that's a basic human right. Except here in the United States, where, of course, legislation
has been
proposed.
Well, it's freedom of speech. I mean, let's face it. Now this is the way we speak. This is the public forum is the internet.
Right. But again, here in the U.S., legislation's been proposed to give the president a kill switch so that he can shut off the internet.
Exactly, and no reporter asked that. Gibbs just kept saying, oh, we're firm believers that they should never have shut off that internet.
Right. Well, anyway, the Muslim Brotherhood. This raises another really disturbing prospect.
A little background on that, because there may be some new listeners who aren't really up to speed on what the history of the Muslim Brotherhood is,
right.
What they are, and how they got founded.
It was founded in the 1920s by Hassan al-Banna, and was initially intended, or at least that was its initial goal or stated goal, to spread Islamic morals and good works, but
Which sounds really good.
Yeah, but it very quickly became involved in politics, and particularly intended to end the colonial rule of England over Egypt, and then following that, then cleanse Egypt of all Western influences. Muslim Brotherhood launched 1928. Branches were set up throughout the country. And by the late 1940s, had as many as 2 million followers in Egypt. Now, we should mention that, and this is not mentioned in the BBC article, that the Muslim Brotherhood was also courted in the 30s and 40s by the Nazis.
Yes.
Yeah. And it was
the salute that they give is the same as the Nazi salute.
That is correct. If you do a Google search or a YouTube search for Fatah or Hamas or Muslim Brotherhood and then the phrase Nazi salute, you will be shocked at what you see. You will be shocked. There is no cultural analog to the Nazi salute in the Arab or Islamic world. They got it from the SS in the 1940s. So the Muslim Brotherhood was essentially co-opted by the influence of the Nazis mm-hmm. and became a radically anti-Israeli influence in the Arab world. And it has spawned, I guess you'd call them daughter organizations or mm-hmm. Like Fatah and Hamas and Al-Qaeda.
And don't forget, Hitler was trying to take over northern Africa. So it's not surprising that he would befriend, the local Arabs.
That is correct. In fact, Yasser Arafat was I'm going to jump out here farther than where my knowledge goes. So I'm going to back up and backtrack from that. But yes, they were there were very prominent Arab leaders in Palestine during the 1940s that were actually officers in the SS. So And
so
like
fast
I said,
forward to today, mm-hmm. and with a background like that, the Muslim Brotherhood has joined in with the rioters to oust Mubarak.
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting because officially, the Muslim Brotherhood is banned in Egypt, but they have been running for office as independents, mm-hmm. instead of as official members of the Muslim Brotherhood.
So this is their chance to take over.
Yeah.
The only way to do it is by a coup.
Mm-hmm. And they sense that this may be their opportunity. And they have been, like Hezbollah in Lebanon, building some infrastructure in Egypt, stepping in to do things that the government can't do, hospitals, schools, and things like that. Now, for whatever reason, Hosni Mubarak appears to be – and it almost to Western observers, and frankly here in the United States, we're pretty insular. We don't pay enough attention to what's going on outside our own borders. It almost seems like this just came out of nowhere, but I find that hard to believe. It's not plausible that this was simply the result of a few people tweeting just like the revolution
the color,
in Tunisia.
I was going to say the color revolutions appeared to come out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, as we mentioned yesterday, this series of revolutions beginning with Tunisia are being called the Jasmine Revolution.
That's right. It is semi-officially now one of the color revolutions that we've been seeing over the last five years or so. So the Muslim Brotherhood does have branches and members throughout the Middle East. And even here in the United States, frankly, and we should point out that something that doesn't get enough attention, especially among conservatives, is that one of the most prominent power brokers in the Republican Party over the last 10 or 15 years, Grover Norquist, has represented, lobbied for guys who are linked pretty conclusively to the Muslim Brotherhood. In fact, there are those who accuse Norquist, because he is married to an Islamic woman, of being a closet Muslim himself.
Who else has been accused of that? Somebody well known. Barry Sotero.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, significantly, Norquist has been making inroads, or at least courting the Tea Party. He held a big cocktail mixer or whatever. He was basically one of the financial underwriters of the first Tea Party conference or convention last year in Nashville, I believe it was. So there are links, between the West and the Middle East through the Muslim Brotherhood,
mm-hmm.
And links to high-ranking members of the Republican Party through the Muslim Brotherhood, frankly. And it really makes you wonder, what's the end game here? What's the benefit? We don't really know who benefits from this.
Well, I would like
yet.
To know. I'm looking at Drudge Report right now. And again, it is, we're recording this at 7.
So it's about 2 o'clock in the morning Egypt time,
yeah.
in Cairo.
And in red it says, USA secretly backs uprising.
Oh, really?
That's what it says.
Well, this is really curious, because if the Muslim Brotherhood is...
Telegraph. America's secret backing for rebel leaders behind the uprising.
Uh-huh. That is really interesting.
Yeah, I haven't read this. I just saw the headline. So I'm curious to see. Oh, the disclosures contained in previously secret U.S. diplomatic dispatches released by the WikiLeaks website show American officials pressed the Egyptian government to release other dissidents who had been detained by the police. And it goes on, we are up to our eyeballs in this as far as the policy of the United States. And I have to say, if Egypt ceases to be our friend,
mm-hmm.
then all we have is Israel.
Yeah.
In that region,
yeah.
and possibly Saudi Arabia, but
and
I don't
Kuwait,
really.
Maybe.
Well, Kuwait has
whatever.
A little Kuwait has to be shaken in its boots.
Yeah. Debka, which is the Israeli news site with intelligence links, is reporting at this hour that there is a possibility of an actual military takeover in Egypt, and protesters in Cairo, Alexandria, Suez. They've been rioting for 4 days now. The government's not been able to put it down. But according to Debka's analysts, the transfer of rule, and I'm quoting now, to the military, the transfer of rule to the military for even an interim period would shake the entire Middle East to its foundations. The U.S. stands to lose its senior Arab ally, whereas a new government in Cairo might modify or abandon Egypt's epic 1979 peace treaty with Israel and turn away from the close relations between the two governments. Egypt has been helping Israel try to keep a lid on the Gaza Strip mm-hmm. by closing border crossings and so forth, through which Hamas has been moving weapons into Gaza, you know, rockets that they fire into Israeli settlements on a disturbingly regular basis. Yeah, this could be bad in the same way that...
Oh, this is huge. This is huge. You know, those of you who are listening to us and you're under 25, you just don't know. You are watching history in the making.
Yeah.
This is one of those moments that years from now, if Jesus doesn't come first, you will say to your kids and your grandkids, you know, I remember watching that on CNN. And they'll say, well, CNN? What was mm-hmm. that?
Yeah. Was that 2D? But yeah, I am not quite old enough to really remember 1967, the war in 67.
I do.
But I'm sure
I remember watching
it
and hearing references to it over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Moshe Dayan was on the news constantly. Gamal Nasser was on the news constantly.
Right.
The woman prime minister at the time. I can't think of her name.
She was always.
I mean, it was
Golda
Meir. Golda Meir.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. And Ariel Sharon. I mean, he was involved. In fact, he participated in the 1948 war.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's probably the oldest living survivor as far as the military, at least big names. You know, and a friend of mine sent me a very interesting thing on Facebook, and I'm not going to name the person, but he said that he has been told, and I won't tell you, it's a trusted person who quoted a rabbi, and the rabbi before he died said, when Ariel Sharon dies, the Messiah will come.
Hmm. Well, we can take that, as...
I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah,
I have no idea either. I really don't. But you and I were talking about, now this isn't connected to that. I'm not saying that this person believed that, but just the word Messiah, which means anointed one. Derek and I were talking downstairs before we came up here about Messiahs. And do you remember, I know you do, but I'm talking to listeners now.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that Derek and I talked about the Nation of Islam believing that Barack Obama is the Messiah that they have been looking for.
And by Nation of Islam, you mean Louis Farrakhan and,
yes.
and his group. Yeah. That's an interesting, because we had talked about that prophecy about the Messiah,
mm-hmm,
the
Islamic
Messiah.
That he would be born of a white woman.
Yeah.
And he was presented by Farrakhan as the Messiah.
Hmm. Interesting things and some disturbing things. Farrakhan back in October of 2008, the Messiah is absolutely speaking.
Mm-hmm.
In Egypt, it's really interesting that in the UK, not only has the United States government called for the Mubarak government to listen to the legitimate grievances of the protesters, mm-hmm. but the same calls are now coming from the government of the UK. According to William Hague, the foreign secretary, he also urged the Egyptian government to heed the legitimate demands of protesters. David Cameron said that Egypt needs reform. So the Western world, the UK and the United States, are basically sticking their noses in and saying Mubarak needs to change the way he governs, or perhaps... Well, who knows what? Step aside. But if the Telegraph is correct and the U.S. has been complicit in setting up these in backing the protests there, I say be careful what you wish for. Because, you know, and we talked about this before the invasion of Iraq took place before we started doing PID radio. But, mm-hmm. The two of us privately. Well, if you've been listening to our conversations back in, back in 2001, 2002, you could see going in that if the United States actually did what it said it was going to do and allowed the Iraqi people to write its own constitution and govern itself according to their wishes, you were going to wind up with a government based on Sharia law and ruled by Shiite Muslims because they're the majority.
Exactly.
In other words, you were basically creating Iran's new best friend.
Oh, absolutely. You essentially negate what happened in the Iran-Iraq war and give everything to Iran.
Right. And we may be on the verge of doing something similarly boneheaded in Egypt, getting rid of Mubarak, who admittedly does not run the most free and open society in the Middle East. But I'm sorry, that's just not the way societies are built in the Middle East. To be honest with you, I'd love to visit Egypt someday, were the conditions safe enough, see the pyramids myself, see the, you know, the history there up close and personally. I doubt I will ever do it, though.
You might one day. Yeah, during the millennium.
Yeah, that's right. But not in this time-space continuum. But I would not want to live. I would not care to live there, frankly. Maybe I'm just biased toward the Midwestern United States or place in the U.S. I don't care much.
Like to get Laura Mansfield's take on this. I'm sure that she's really busy these days. She has a tendency to get inundated with requests, but she lived there.
That's a really good point. I'll see if I can get a query out to her and find out what she thinks of all this, because you're right. She did live in Egypt for some time, and that's where she learned to speak Arabic.
Well, keep talking. So. I'm going to see if she's got a Twitter account.
Yeah. This may be a case where the United States, for whatever reason, and I'm still trying to discern a reason, that a benefit that the American government thinks it might obtain by supporting an uprising in Egypt. But if there is a new government there, as Debka suggests, it may very well be a very anti-Israeli government. Now, if John Loftus is correct, a co-author of the book The Secret War Against the Jews, and he presents a lot of evidence. Now, I've not read the book, but those who speak about it and recommend it have my respect. If he's correct that U.S. intelligence, British intelligence, through Saudi intelligence, are in fact opposed to the state of Israel, in spite of what our government says, you know, that there is no better friend than the United States is no better friend than Israel.
Mm-hmm.
If in fact behind the scenes we're manipulating things, this may be one of the consequences, one of the manifestations of the true policy of the United States government.
Yes.
I mean, you know, Egypt borders on Israel, and a Muslim Brotherhood-led government in Egypt would not be a good thing for the state of Israel.
No, and sadly, that may be, you know, it's really, I have always had the impression that Hillary Clinton was actually pro-Palestinian, anti-Israeli.
Mm-hmm.
She flip-flops back and forth, so I can't say this for sure, but that's the general impression I've had. The day before the riots began, she came out and said, nothing is going to happen to Egypt or any Egypt. It is a stable nation.
Mm-hmm.
She used the word stable. And the very next day,
the riots began.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it bears watching, and we'll be watching it through this weekend, and we encourage you to do so as well, because I think Sharon's right. This is an historic event. Israel has had its share of turmoil over the last, well, throughout history, but it has been relatively stable over the last 30 years under Hosni Mubarak.
She doesn't have a Twitter account. I'm looking at her website, and she doesn't have a link there. So
we shall see what transpires over the weekend. There are a few other things out there that are worthy of note here. You found something, another interesting posting, a solicitation for proposal at fedbizops.gov.
Let me see if I can find it.
Well, I've got it up here. It's for the this is for the intelligence community's equivalent of DARPA, the IARPA. Yeah, Intelligence Advanced Research Projects Activity.
They will host a Proposers Day conference for the SIRIUS program, SIRIUS, on February 24th of 2011, in anticipation of the release of a new solicitation in support of the program. The purpose of the conference will be to provide information on Sirius, to address questions from potential proposers, and provide a forum for the potential proposer to present their – boy, you could have written this better, people.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. The goals are – there's a broad consensus, it says, that exists that human decision-making relies on a repertoire of simple, fast, heuristic decision rules that are used in specific situations. These decision rules can bias general problem-solving in ways that produce erroneous results. When an intelligence problem invokes these biases, analysts may draw inferences or adopt beliefs that are logically unsound or not supported by evidence. Cognitive biases in analysis tend to increase with the level of uncertainty, lead to systematic errors, filter perceptions, shape assumptions, and constrain alternatives. In other words, they want to turn people into computers.
Yeah.
And they want to do it with video games.
And what's interesting is the type of games that they're proposing to put out there. They're spelling the word Sirius, S-E-R-I-O-U-S. But
uh-huh.
The program, the project is S-I-R-I-U-S.
Yes.
Yeah, as in the constellation that
as in the Sirius cult.
Yeah, exactly. So that is very definitely worth
I don't think they'll let us attend.
Paying attention to. This was posted on the 25th, just 3 days ago. So, and it's well known that video games can change the way people who play those games respond mm-hmm. in real life situations.
And here's the thing. If I were a member of the DOD, Department of Defense, and I, you know, was looking at what's going on in Egypt, and I think, okay, if we have writing here and we have to maintain order with our military mm-hmm. and people were literally becoming very dangerous, would our military shoot?
Hmm.
Well, if we could train them to think more clearly in that situation and not have cognitive biases take over.
Yeah, like shooting unarmed civilians.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's yeah, that really is disturbing.
Iborgs.
Yeah. We talk about that for a moment, too. I want to talk about something I think's got an occult connection here, but very much in the mainstream of pop culture.
Well, go with it.
And that is Lady Gaga.
Oh, please. Yeah. I know where you're going with this. So, okay.
Yeah.
Tell them.
Because this is mainstream pop culture.
I know.
And there's an Aleister Crowley link.
Mm-hmm.
Aleister Crowley, Lady Gaga has been contracted by some company to create a new fragrance. She's, I guess, developing all kinds of, because anymore, when you're a pop star, you're not just about singing and making hit records. You're a full-blown multimedia phenomenon. You know, you are essentially a marketing phenomenon, which is Lady Gaga. As her request, She has requested the company that is developing this first fragrance that will bear her name, that the fragrance, and I'm going to quote from the article now at fashionista.com, the pop star has requested that the scent smell of blood and semen, end quote.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the link to Aleister Crowley is that in the Gnostic Mass, they prepare a substance by mixing menstrual blood with semen.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what is served to participants in this mass in unholy mockery.
Look, if you watched MTV Awards last August, you saw Lady Gaga essentially participate in a blood sacrifice.
That's correct.
On the stage.
Yeah, that is correct. So, fashionista.com posted this story. They don't know what to make of it other than to say, gosh, you can't make this stuff up. But if you're looking with discerning eyes, you can see, okay, there's more to it here than this. This is just flat evil. And like I said, I don't think it's coincidental that this echoes the Gnostic Mass of Aleister Crowley.
Mm.
So that's why we call the show Peering into Darkness.
Yeah.
So, well, tonight on View from the Bunker Live, we will have a couple of very interesting ladies who will be guests tonight. The first woman, in fact, the only person, as far as I know, ever accused by the United States government of serving as an agent of the intelligence service of Saddam Hussein, Susan Lindauer. What's really curious about her story is that she happens to be the first cousin of Andrew Card, who was the White House chief of staff under George W. Bush.
I had forgotten that little tidbit.
Yeah. And she notified her cousin that she was meeting with Iraqi intelligence. So if you're trying to serve as an agent of influence for a foreign government, telling your first cousin, who is essentially running the White House for the president, seems like kind of a bad idea.
Her story is amazing, yeah. And you don't want to miss it. And your other guest?
Other guest is Sarah Leslie. Talked with her on Tuesday night. And we'll kind of go through a discussion of some of the basic identifying characteristics of Dominionism. It's difficult to pin down what Dominionism is because there's no central church that issues an official doctrine.
Well, especially when you ask them, are you a Dominionist?
They go, say, no.
No, I'm a Baptist. I'm a Christian. Whatever it is.
So we'll talk about that tonight. That's 10 p.m. Eastern Time, GMT-5, at blogtalkradio.com/PID radio. And we'll be back on Monday, God willing.
Are we out of time?
We are.
Where'd it go?
Like that.
It did go like that.
Until then, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone.